Another example of inequality, the centuries-old master and servant mentality. Manual labourers are frowned upon as unskilled, experienced, and common sense is something that cannot be taught from a textbook. How long would the world survive without these valuable people? Well, I can tell you it's certainly not on this show that anyone doing those very highly skilled jobs would be referred to as unskilled. It's actually a phraseology, even when talking up certain jobs. I don't use that terminology. Karen, who was on your show in the last hour, did a hair piece for me last year. I am a cancer patient and losing my hair was worse than the treatment. And Karen is a miracle worker. She's amazing and it's great that this is here on our doorstep. The work she's doing is amazing for women. She really built up my confidence and I'm a different person now coming in from Burnie. Greg, I'm a chef and the price of food has gone up 20% this year, but some places are taking real advantage. That soup can be made for about 50 cents and a toasty, a loaf in super value is 105. Chicken isn't that dear either. Another, it's like people throwing rubbish out of cars. People don't dirty their own homes, but streets, forestry, all public places, because people don't consider these places as belonging to them. It's a hangover from being dispossessed over hundreds of years ago. The land was taken over, so people destroyed it as an act of contempt, and they all still are treating the land as not their own. Interesting take. Yes, Greg, people have no respect for public toilets, and I'm sure it's not always the males. I had to use the toilets at the Shorefront in Buncrana last week. First time using them since they were updated and refurbished, thanks to the Friel family. One was blocked and overflowing. The second was disgusting, but thank God the third one was fine. Not good enough, thank you. If I go into a toilet, I use the toilet, and then I flush the chain and have a look behind me. See, and I'm no angel, by the way, just in case anyone thinks I'm trying to profess that I am. But it's basic. You know, that's what separates us from animals, you would hope, that you do your business, a one or a two or whatever it is, you flush the toilet and you try and leave it as you found it. But there are some people that seem to go into toilets and they lose the run of themselves. Most of those public toilets are messy because the majority of people using them are drunk. I still manage to get it close to where it's supposed to go. Why include the cost of alcohol into the cost of living? It's just part of living for some people, whether you like it or not. Paul McLaughlin is the gardener at Ballacdar Garden Centre. He's with us now. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
How are you getting on?
Not so bad at all.
Summer's over.
Seems to be.
Is it over? It's over. I forget about it.
Yeah, hopefully it's over, exactly. But there's definitely a wee change in the weather, all right.
You can see how it just edged in as we close, as we edged towards September and also as the schools went back. But we had a good run of weather, I think, for people on their holidays, didn't we?
Yes, pretty much the month of August was particularly good. So it wasn't, there was very little rain. So there is a wee bit of rain now, be quite welcome, because there'd be still some growth there because the soil is still quite warm, you know.
Obviously, people are gathering water. This rain is going to obviously be beneficial, right? But I mean, given the lack of moisture over a long period of time, even if we get a couple of days of heavy rain, it's helpful, but it's not necessarily what the ground needs, or is it?
No, exactly. Even funny, on the roads at the moment, you can see the water running off quite quickly, if you know what I mean, because the ground's quite hard. So you need a sort of sustained amount of sort of soft rain, maybe, to actually be absorbed a bit, if you know what I mean.
Despite my best efforts, the lovely summer flowers that I got down the road have got to the point now where, there were still some flowers, but they were thinning out and I pulled them out waiting for the next thing.
Right, yes.
That, as I say, I think I didn't put enough soil in the pot. I think I put too much gravel in there. But anyway, that's my own problem. Is that across the board or are some people holding on to those flowers and their pots are still looking good?
It's not across the board yet. Some flowers are still looking quite good. This period of dry weather has been sore on them. So it hasn't, especially around the 1st of August there was a lot of wind, which for people's hanging baskets, that really was quite detrimental because it was quite sudden. People maybe hadn't a chance to protect them, if you know what I mean. But no, some are still going on flying and theoretically should go on up to about the end of October nearly.
Really? But, I really did mess that up then, didn't I?
No, because I'm a wee bit guilty myself, to be honest. My own around the door have been a wee bit neglected too. So, but it's just sort of, I don't know, maybe it's a change of routine. People sort of, like you say, summer, some people see summer's been over now, the kids are back and stuff.
So and rain, just, even when it does rain, it doesn't always hit where it should hit. People should continue to nurture as best they can their summer planting. We're too early, really, for transitioning, are we, into winter bedding?
But you sort of can work it in a certain way. If you have, like, say, 75% of your pots looking perfect and there's one, like, gap in it, if you know what I mean, which is ruining the whole display, don't be afraid to actually pull out that plant and put in one. If you know what I mean, you always get something to fill out the gap just to keep the rest going on for longer.
What is the soil like at the moment for growing? I mean, it is the soil temperatures are still high, I presume.
Yes.
The temperatures are still in the sort of mid to late teens. We're getting a bit of moisture now. Is it still good growing weather?
It would be good growing weather. This rain will help. So the growing had sort of stopped there for a while because the ground was very dry. Actually, you could see the likes of the willows along the hedges and that have started to turn brown, and that's just from lack of water, basically. Autumn's kind of coming early to them. But now we bit of rain now, and the growth should continue for another month.
Brilliant stuff. Right, fruit and veg gardens, let's talk about them. Where are we at in their cycle?
Yes, fruit and veg gardens, you would be in the point of harvesting at this stage or very close to it. Funny, last week we were working down in Ards Friary there, and they have a big walled garden full of mature fruit trees there, and they're all sort of different stages depending on the varieties. But like plums are ready pretty much. The hedges are absolutely covered in blackberries there at the minute. It's been a very good growing year. And most apples, some apples are actually ready now. And some.
How do you know though? Because there comes a point too whereby, you know, you start finding stuff in them potentially or what have you.
Yes.
So how do you know when your fruit's ready?
A couple of wee tricks for knowing how it's ready. Generally, if you're thinking of picking them, if you twist the apple
rotate
like
it, yeah.
90 degrees and it snaps off, it should be ready.
Mm.
But that may or may not work depending on the tree.
But if you get a few of them that are like that, do you harvest the whole lot? You don't go one at a time?
No, pretty much. Generally, a fruit tree like the apples there, where the outside ones where they hit the sun are going to be riper than the ones on the inside of the tree where they've been sort of covered by leaves. So harvesting can be done over the course of a couple of weeks.
When we were kids, you would rotate the apple on the stalk. Do you know what you got from the shop? Every rotation was an A.
Yes.
So you kept rotating that till it broke off, and say it landed on G, that was the first letter of the person that loved you, right?
Yes.
And then you would turn it around and tap the apple again, A, B, C, and when it broke through the skin, that was the second letter of something or other. I can't remember.
Yes, I remember the first part of that. I never said the tapping.
Now you tap it and that'll give you the second.
There's another one as well where you actually peel the apple and try and get the skin off in one continuous
bit. Okay.
Throw it over your shoulder, and if it forms a letter, that's the person you love or whatever.
I'm too lazy for that one. All right, okay.
But another thing about apples, a more foolproof way, is if you actually take an apple off a tree and cut it in half and know the seeds inside, if they're white or green, they're actually
still alive.
Still immature. Whereas if it's brown,
a pear's more difficult to judge when they're.
Pears, around here, pears tend to be very hard to get to ripen.
Yeah.
You just don't have the sunshine. So a lot of people take them off the tree.
And what happens when you take them off? Do they ever soften?
The wool soften over time. And what people can do is actually, if you put them into a brown paper bag with a banana, it'll actually ripen them or a few bananas.
Because it's releasing. People will stick a banana in their fruit bowl and wonder why everything doesn't last as long.
Exactly.
I can't remember what the chemical it releases is.
It's methanol or something like that.
Yeah. So it will speed up the...
We just don't have the sunshine around here for raping the pear.
So the hedgerows are full of blackberries. They're safe. What should we do with them? Picking them, making the jams?
Just eat away, make jam out of them. Even some people would make wine out of them and stuff, you know, so they would...
Have you ever made wine out of them?
Not out of blackberries, no.
Okay.
But it's on the to-do list. So it is. They're generally good up to the end of September. Traditionally, after St. Michael's Day, it was recommended not to pick them.
Yeah, okay, but you can tell with your eye.
If they look
nice and shiny and juicy.
Yeah, and if they're kind of dusky, they're probably past their best.
Okay. I had a comment about spuds here. I've got these here. I'm going to talk about them separately in a moment. About spuds. Let me see if this is... I have new potatoes, and once they go cold, they go black. I have to dump them as he can't eat them the next day. Is there too much fertilizer put in the soil or what? New spuds weren't like this years ago. I've stopped buying new spuds because of this. Now, it's not a person growing them on their own, but have you observed anything like that?
I have seen it, and I'm sorry, I can't actually be of any benefit.
It's process, I think, rather than...
Quite possibly, you know, but no, I have seen it happen, all right. So I have, but I'm not sure what's behind it.
Right, but I have a bag of tomatoes here that you've brought in. And do you know what you've grown them yourself, right?
Yes.
I can't wait to cut one of them in half, slice it and have it on a cheese or with ham. Just actually get a sense, because I had kicked tomatoes not so long ago out of a shop. So tomatoes, harvesting, spuds, as we mentioned, onions, carrots.
Yes, onions, carrots should all be flying at this stage. If they're growing onions, use them as they go along. But now into the sort of end of August, start of September, it's when you can harvest your whole crop and they'll actually keep from now on generally.
So say I've had a situation where I've had a bag of onions and one slipped out of the bag and it's been sitting in the cupboard for quite some time. And then I come across it. This sounds terrible, right? But anyway, And it's got like a 4 or 5 inch stem coming from it. What's happening?
Generally, he's just trying to grow again. So he is. That's like the wee onions, like the onion sets you buy to set into the ground, are just basically immature onions. Mm. They're just small onions. And then those.
So what would I do with that? Put it in a pot, cut the top off
it? Theoretically, put it in a pot. You can actually, you see like in TikTok, that people have hacks where like no one have used the onion. You cut the top off it and actually set it into the compost and it will grow again.
That's okay.
So just you're getting the most out of your bag of onions.
But with that in mind, you know, it's a cycle, isn't it? Whilst tomatoes, potatoes, onions, your carrots are all going well now, the more committed gardener is starting to think about what's going on ahead. So is now a time you're planting for the winter, spring?
Yeah, pretty much. For the likes of your onions, scallions, that sort of thing, a wee bit early. You'd probably towards the end of the month, maybe into October. But like the cabbages, even most of the cabbage family, lettuce, that sort of stuff, you could plant in now. Some of the winter lettuce, isn't it?
Other things that are blooming at the moment, rowan trees, what's going there?
Yes.
And other varieties?
Just noticed driving about the last wee while, the rowan trees this year and hawthorns are absolutely covered in berries. Mm. If you look at one of the trees, it's like it's more red than green almost. And people traditionally always said, oh, that was a sign of a hard winter to come.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I fully believe it or not.
Well, it's like a broken clock. You're going to be right some of the time.
Pretty much. Yeah. I always reckon that was nature stocking the larder for birds and stuff for over a hard winter.
Whilst it might be too early to plant certain things, can we be harvesting seeds, storing them for when the time's right? What kind of stuff?
Yes, a lot of your perennial plants, that sort of stuff, will have seeds coming on nicely. So the
perennial means they come around every year, do
they? Pretty much. Okay. They come on every year, they die back for the winter, and then they come back next year. But a lot of them would produce seeds earlier on, the lupins, even poppies at the minute would be doing it. And the annuals, they're nasturtiums at the minute, they're casting seeds. So perfect time to collect them, dry them off a bit and store them for next year just.
All right, let's go on to the lawns. I think lawns, generally speaking, because of the weather, are still, you know, looking great.
Yes.
But obviously, do you just enjoy that for now and we'll talk about it again, or is there anything we need to be doing?
Pretty much, if your lawn is looking good, just sort of keep her cutting. Don't be worrying too much about cutting it too low at this stage of the year. If you know what I mean, but just keep her tidy and you'll probably be cutting right.
Is it too early for an autumn feed?
You could feed from now on, and now would be actually a good time to have the ground sort of semi-dry where you could actually treat for moss as well.
Okay. I'm delighted to see some of our roads widening. You know, that's the way I see it. I don't see it as hedges getting cut. As the road getting wider. That's happening, and it can happen. It depends on safety issues, lines of sight and stuff. But the official hedge cutting season opens at the start of next month. Is that right?
Yeah, first of September.
Yeah. So, as I say, some of it's happening purely because the roads are dangerous.
Round junctions and stuff.
100%. But even where roads narrow, certain parts of our county. Yeah. So it's justified, I think. Let's get to some questions. And by the way, if you're quick, it's not too late to get a question in for Paul. I have 3 hydrangeas with big green leaves. However, I have no flowers. How do I, what can I do to get flowers?
Probably for this year, I would say the flowers probably have missed the boat to an extent. They should nearly be showing flowers at this stage. What possibly happened there, if they're good, healthy plants, obviously the first thing you'd always say is give them a good feed. But if they're good, healthy plants, what I would do would be maybe question, did you prune them too late last year, maybe, and took the flower heads off them? But generally, if you feed them in the spring with something like potash, you should get good flowers next year.
How long will the geraniums last in my summer pots coming in from Mary? Thanks,
geranium
Mary.
Summer pots, outside the geranium should last up to the first frost, which is around sort of the start of November, around that. But the geranium's actually a plant that will survive year-round if you actually take them out of the pots and bring them inside from about the 1st of November.
What's the best way to store window boxes and hanging baskets over the window? Do I need to cut the plants back, etc.? This is interesting, actually.
Yes.
I like this question.
Yes. Store them, obviously, if it's annuals is in them, sort of clear them out.
You see,
when they're finished.
The annuals means they're one and done, right?
1 year, yeah.
And that's it. So when they die off, they're just going to rot in your box.
Yeah, pretty much.
They won't come back next year.
No. No, most annuals will not come back. Some of them can drop seeds if the seeds come back, but it's very sporadic. Generally, someone like that there, whenever they're finished, maybe clear them out, just put them in the garage or behind the garage.
So when this caller's asking about cutting them back, if they are, can't you remember the word you used? There's no point cutting them back.
Yes, and if they're annuals, there's not much point in cutting them back. You can tidy them up to give you a wee bit longer out of them, if you know what I mean.
They're maybe looking to put them in, you know, when the time comes to put them in the shed or wherever they're putting them. Right. All right. So
if they're annuals, just clear out the box and you can store the box in.
Okay. Hi, when's the best time for planting slips of Grisellinia?
Yep.
August, September or later for the garden spot?
Generally, end August, start of September is perfect. Pretty much right now, very perfect time. So it would be. Generally, Grisellinia, hedging plants, quite easy to grow. Mm. Key there would be tri-load. Like, they're not costing anything if you're just cutting the hedge. So take like, if you need 50, take 150.
This is actually a question that's along the same lines of the previous ones in terms of your hanging baskets, your window boxes or your pots outside your front door or wherever. If you take the plants out, what do you do with the soil in them?
Yes, soil in, sorry, it depends on the size of your pot, largely. If it's quite a small pot, I would tend to dump the soil.
Even rather than even retain some of it and mix it with new soil? Or
you can do, if you're putting it into the same pot again, same smallish pot, you want your you want there to be plenty of nutrition in it.
Well, you see black, rich, wet soil,
yeah,
and then you see sort of brown, faded, dry. I think that's, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's almost as if all the good has been drawn from it.
Yes, a lot of the time.
It's a product, right?
As a product, surely. And like, because your bedding plants or whatever have been working very hard over the summer, they have taken a lot of nutrition out of it. Mm-hmm. So if it's a very big pot, I would tend to leave a third behind and dump 2/3 and refresh 2/3.
Okay.
And if you are using old stuff, be careful. Just keep a wee out for slug eggs, something like that there, which you don't want to reintroduce to your new.
Well, how do I get rid of aphids, slugs or other pests naturally?
Getting rid of pests naturally. I suppose Angus was on there a wee while ago. If you want to do it naturally, it's all about building up a good ecosystem. Sort of attract like beneficial predators to your garden. Like say aphids there, ladybirds. They're natural.
I think sometimes people are looking for a natural quick fix that isn't a chemical.
Yes.
And I'm not sure such a thing exists.
Long term, probably not, if you know what I mean. For aphids that you can use the likes of your garlic sprays, something like that will actually prevent them sort of, or make your plants unpalatable for them, if you know what I mean. But they'll be still knocking about the area. So someone like that there. But the fact of the matter is just, like I say, build up the ecosystem, sort of introduce frogs, maybe I'll deal with your slugs,
right.
Introduce ladybirds, if possible. We'll deal with aphids and that.
Mary Jo on Facebook, I have a rose bush and I can't seem to get it to settle and grow. I have it to the bare of a place. Do I have it in too bare of a place? Okay, so the rose won't settle and grow. She's asking, is it in too bare of a place?
Sounds like it, to be honest. If it's sort of rocking about, you get a thing called root rock in a plant, where if it's in a windy spot, it goes over and back and it creates a like gap around the stem, if you know what I mean, which then allows disease and stuff down into the plant. So no, generally give it a good firming even. And people tend to be quite timid planting plants. Like whenever I started out, I was told the best thing you have is your boot heel. Actually, put in the plant very well and don't be afraid to tramp it in.
Pack it in, basically. Pack it in, right.
So that there, if you want to retain it in the position where it is, maybe if you put up some sort of windbreak, even for over the winter, that you could remove for the summer, then might be the,
good idea.
Might be the answer.
Co-planting, companion planting.
Yes.
What plants grow well together?
What plants grow well together? I suppose it depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for flowers or vegetables or something like that, generally it works well for companion planting. If your nasturtiums would be very good to go in around other stuff, or marigolds particularly. But in terms of food, a lot of the time what food works well, see your tomatoes there or that. What, do you know what foods work well together on a plate? Actually work well together in the garden. So like say tomatoes, rosemary, stuff like that. So just if you do a bit of investigating and sort of grow what you like. You know what I mean? You can always find a companion for it.
A caller asks, what do I do if my plants are wilting? Now, they don't sort of talk of what types of plants they are or where they are, so I'm not sure how easy that is for you to answer.
Wilting tends to be a lack of water. So it is. If they're in the ground, give the area a good soaking. And if it's like in a hanging basket or a window box, maybe if you get a big basin, and rather than water it over the top, because the compost may have dried out and become hard, is actually to set it into a bucket or something for a while and just let it soak up water that way.
Right, roses seem to be a whole handling. Last year I didn't cut back my roses. They grew fantastically this year. Now I'm wondering, should I not cut them back this year?
I would advise to cut them back, to be quite honest, because roses produce flowers and fairly new growth. So if you cut it back, then the new growth this year, no flower on that. If you leave them, they'll always put on the new growth, but you'll have a big gap at the bottom.
Yeah.
So to be honest, the probably science there would suggest I give them a cutback.
Can you grow an apple tree from seed if you're patient?
Yes, but the problem there is most apple trees are actually grafted. So to successfully grow an apple tree from seed that's going to produce good apples would be unlikely.
I think if you could answer this one, you'd be a millionaire. How can I get rid of mane's tail permanently?
Get rid of mare's tail permanently. Prayer, possibly.
Right, that's about the height.
No, mare's tail is just disaster to be getting rid of. To be honest, it's been about since the time of the dinosaurs, and I can't see us getting rid of it.
It outlasted the dinosaurs.
Yeah, pretty much. If it's on a paved area or tarmac or something like that, there, the way to go would be generally salt.
Yeah.
Like, even if you get the, like, road de-ice and stuff.
That'll do, it's all
that'll
right.
That'll knock them back.
I only have time for one more. Can I cut back rhododendron and hydrangeas hard, as a couple are completely overgrown now at this stage?
Yes, cut away.
All right, listen, thanks very much for that, Paul. I do appreciate it.
No bother.
Who's your guest today?
Well, my guest, Abby Lee.
Abby Lee.
Everybody else is back at school and Abby's not back until Monday.
There you go. Okay, so enjoy the last couple of days of it then. Thanks very much, Paul.
We'll chat to you soon.
And thank you so much for all of your questions for Paul. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. The time now is 11:25. Kevin Fury's like an Asian hornet. You'll never know where you'll find him. Kevin, good Perfect. Morning to you. Where are you? What are you doing?
Good morning, Greg. Well, yes, we are live here at the Bus Éireann Depot here in Letterkenny. We're here for their Customer Appreciation Day. Just got underway at 11 o'clock, so we did this morning, and it's on now until 2 o'clock. And basically, it's about saying a gur maigat. Thank you, of course, to everyone for using Bus Éireann and for the great service that they do provide right across Donegal, right across the Northwest, right across the country as well, too. So lots happening here today. There's some great spot prizes in there. There's two 50-euro Shopbell Cave vouchers as well to be won. There's lots of merch, keyrings, pens, pencils, all to be given away here today. So if you're in the Letterkenny area, maybe you're over in the shopping centre doing a little bit of shopping, you can pop over, and instead you'll be with a chance of winning some great prizes here today. So we're live through until 2.
Yeah, and there's lots going on there. So what can people look forward to? As you mentioned, we're there, so that's great crack. Spot prizes, merch, as you've been talking of. Is there an ice cream van on site this year?
There is an ice cream. If you just look there now, you can see the ice cream truck is here. Temperatures may have dropped the last day or two, but that doesn't matter.
But that's good. It just means your cone lasts longer. That's
it. Exactly. You're not against the clock to eat it. So yes, the ice cream truck is here. There's lots of other wee bits and pieces as well happening throughout the day. So it's spot prices and bits and pieces. So it's going to be a great couple of hours. So as I said, if you're in the Letterkenny area, or maybe you're tuned into the show and you're on your way into Letterkenny, pop in and say hello to us.
Yeah, so whether we're on air or not, we've been there since 11 and we'll be there throughout the course of the afternoon as well. And Kevin, as you mentioned too, you know, Bus Éireann provides a very important service along with other private bus and coach services, though, that are there getting us from A to B and what have you. And this is them effectively saying, listen, thanks for putting your trust in us. This is about celebrating you, the customer, not necessarily us, the business.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you just missed the Derry bus just left here. I think there actually was two buses going to Derry. There was a Galway bus here earlier on. And as well, people heading away, maybe, I know we're coming to the end of summer, but heading away, say, to the airport or something like that. You know, you can basically park your car if you live wherever in the Letterkenny area, get the bus up to Dublin Airport, which is a fantastic service. It means you don't have to worry about parking. Jump in the car and you can basically sit back, relax, enjoy the journey up to Dublin, as they say. And all the local places as well too. I was just having a wee look at the bus listings in there. Like, they go to different places like Strabane's and Johnston, and even places too like Glenconkill south of the county, which would be more familiar with myself, you know, going to Glenconkill a couple of times a day. So it really is, I don't think people realise until maybe they actually use the service, and I would have used it and was very grateful back in the college days in and out to Derry. But they do have some great services, and as I said today, it's just something about saying thank you.
Yeah, of course. And the staff as well too. Of course, I know today's about the customers, but the staff on the ground and the overwhelming majority of bus drivers too, they're accommodating and helpful as well. So a big thanks to them. So yep, in terms of what you're doing there and sort of what we can look forward to on air, Kevin, remind us of that.
Yeah, so basically we're just here today. We're just here speaking to people. As I said, there's a load of people. It's amazing the way, you know, it's quite quiet here now, but in half an hour, this place could be packed. That's basically the way it goes. So we're just in here chatting to people and just, you know, finding where they're going to and stuff like that there. And as I said, we've got some great music as well, too, keeping the atmosphere going. Joe's here. Joe's on the deck, so he is. And he's got the music going. So as I said, it's going to be a great day. So listen, if you're in the area, pop over and say hello to us, because you never know, you could be with a chance of winning not one, but two 50-euro Shopbell Cave vouchers.
And will you be linking in with further programming?
Yes, we'll be linking in with John a little bit later on Around the Northwest, not once but actually twice today. So lots happening here today, and as I said, we'll be telling you more about what else is taking place from A to B throughout the day here on.
All right, listen, thanks very much for that. So our team are down there right now at the bus station in Letterkenny. Call in and say hello, as Kevin mentioned there. Maybe you're in the shopping centre or what have you. We've got some goodies down there, free merch, spot prizes, pens, there's ice cream. It's all as a thank you from Bus Éireann as they host their customer appreciation day. So good luck with that. Right now, the petrol situation. Go Petrol stations say they're aware of instances over the weekend which happened in particular with AIB cars. This is an issue with AIB and not the station. This is again sort of talking to a situation whereby someone has put the card in, pumped 30 euro of petrol or diesel and ended up with a 125 euro hold on their card. We've had people being embarrassed when they went into shops to buy their goods and there was no money in the card, or maybe direct debits have bounced. Go say it's not theirs. It's an interesting one because I've only ever seemingly had this issue at the one location, but maybe that's just where people are more vocal. I don't know. But anyway, apparently it's AIB's fault. But we're getting on to AIB, and I'll be very interested to hear what AIB have to say about it in terms of their level of culpability in that. Now, we're joined on the programme by Councillor Micheál Colum Ó Gaillimh-Easpaig. Good morning to you, Micheál Colum. Thanks very much for your time. Máidín Uí.
Máidín Uí, this is Greg.
You are also wearing the hat today of chair of the Irish Language Committee of Donegal County Council. And it's off the back of contact by a number of people regarding the controversy surrounding the Ladies Football Association, that's the LGFA, who it's claimed are refusing to hold disciplinary hearings in Irish for a Gaeltacht club. So what is the background beyond that to this story?
Well, I suppose there'll be a few people saying to themselves, geez, Micheál has no interest in sport, and I don't have any interest in sport. But what I do have a massive interest in is our language. And I suppose after being contacted by a good number of people, like it says yesterday, because it is my local club, I suppose, to be honest with you, my brother is the chairperson of the club, my father is one of the founding members of the club, and also my brother John is the chair of Pell na Gaeltachta for Donegal. But whatever happened to me, I just had no interest in sport. But that said, after being contacted by a good number of people, I did get in contact with the LGFA and had good constructive conversations with them, where I looked to try to bring about a solution that would suit. And I suppose, if I was to be honest with you, there's one person in particular that I would know very, very well and have huge respect for. To be very honest with you. But we talked at length. I've been in contact with them in Ballyclia today again. And unfortunately, to date, we haven't found a solution. But from my position on it as an Irish language activist and the chairperson of the Irish Language Committee within the county of Corlicombe Donegal, I don't believe it's good enough that whatever the reason is, because I'm not involved in why there's a disciplinary case that's been taken, that's not my interest whatsoever. But I do think that it's not good enough for a national sporting organisation not to recognise our language and the fact that where there's reps been done, that whoever's up, I don't know the terminology for this, but whoever is up on a disciplinary inquiry, that they're not able to conduct themselves in the first language.
Why aren't they able to do that, though? Is this coming from Donegal LGFA? Is this coming from, you know, Dublin HQ? You know, why is it? Is it that there's no one available? Is there no one available to conduct the inquiry in Irish, or is it policy? What's the reasons?
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of. And one of my proposals is that, look, as you know, Greg, we spoke about this at length, especially a good number of years ago when I was lucky enough to get elected. I've conducted myself solely through the medium of Gaelic. And we have translation services. We have a fantastic team within Corlicombe Donegal. And one of the things that I was hoping to offer would be, if allowed, would be to provide that service the translation service, and if there was a cost to that, that I would be more than happy to look for to find the cost.
Yeah, but if we were to go down that route, presumably those who wish to be heard in Irish are fluent in Irish. If we're going down that route, that means that the LGFA don't have any person or persons who can actually can conduct the inquiry or the hearing in Irish, which is would be a problem.
It, like.
It would be a problem, surely.
Yeah, but I think, look, and because this has taken place now, like this week, I think the translation service was a really good option. We have very, very capable and trained staff, if that was possible, and I would have worked towards that. And I think, you know, just look, with the massive focus in relation to our language and the neglect of the Gaeltacht over many generations, but the revival most definitely within the language, and especially our young people who are playing football, the women and the men who are passionate about their language, you know, who local clubs from Clonlea to Gedor, Clonlea, Nimura, Gaeltacht Laoghaire, Narasa, all the clubs who are doing so much fantastic work in terms of putting the language central to the football, and now we have the LGFA not allowing Gaelic speakers who feel more comfortable to conduct themselves through the medium of Gaelic, because it is the first language, it is the language of our country, and when you look then that when you look at the Brits and how Liam from Kneecap has been allowed to conduct his defence through Gaelic and English courts, but yet our own national sporting body and this incident isn't given that opportunity to Gaelic speakers from the Gaeltacht. They're relevant even if they were from Letchkanil or Nadunaf or anywhere in the 32
but
counties.
I think it's really
unfair.
You said you've had contact with the association, sorry, and just in case it's not clear, what have they said to you as to why these hearings can't happen in Irish or Gaelic? What has the association said to you the reason is?
Well, I suppose I've talked to quite a good number of people over this last day or two in relation to this here, and then it looks like that there's not a clear policy. And I suppose one of the things that I was challenging is that they're saying, oh, there's no policy written to say that we can do this through Gaelic. And I'm saying, well, does it state that it has to be through basically a foreign language, which is English? Which I don't think it would actually say that. So on that basis, it doesn't.
But they're saying there's no reason, there's nothing to suggest it can or should be done in Irish, but that's not a reason as to not doing it Irish. So what reason are they actually giving for not conducting this hearing in Irish? Is it resources, or like you said, I think you said in a post that you've said you've had numerous contacts with the association and discussions. What reason are they giving for not doing it in Irish?
Well, the difficulty so far is that I haven't been able to sit down with the right person and get exactly. So the number of people and the good number of people that I have been speaking to, and in fairness, I have to recognise the fact that these people are volunteers, or most of them have been volunteers, giving up their free time and investing quite a lot of time and energy into what they do. And I need to say that. But also is that we're talking about the national language, and if it's a case that they don't have an Irish language policy, that itself is questionable, considering that Commonwealth Gael would have a clear policy in relation to language. Now, did they implement it, or are they doing enough? That's another day's conversation. But as we speak right now, in relation to the LGFA, is that they are clearly stating that they won't be allowing Gaelic speakers that happens to be from the Gaeltacht to conduct their defence, which that's my understanding, through the medium of Gaelic, through a language that they're far more comfortable to articulate themselves. Because Gaelic speakers, especially within the Gaeltacht or in other areas, but especially in the Gaeltacht, look, your think process is very different from an imperialist language think process. It's a very, very way different of thinking. And I think it's quite discriminating against Gaelic speakers and the Gaeltacht by not allowing us
I would turn up at the hearing and I wouldn't respond to English, and I'd only communicate us Gaelic and take it from there, because
Well, I would fully support what you're saying, and certainly this isn't about me, and far from it. But I remember when I went to the council at the beginning, and Greg and me, and you had quite a lot of conversation around this, and I have to say Highland were extremely supportive of my position on it, even though that at the time, you know, I was being hammered, I was being mocked, I was being ignored, told to be ignored, and it's about that consistency. But look, I would have no difficulty for anybody to do that, and I think it's a very principled stand. And like I says, Liam from Kneecap are going into an English court and being able to defend themselves in our language against the language of the occupier. And but yet here we have as our football in terms of our heritage, our culture, our identity, and that association, which does fantastic work, and it's really, really hard work, I don't doubt, to take women's football to where it is today from where it came from, and that I have to be open and say fully support, and couldn't acknowledge them enough and praise them enough. But in relation to the specific question, which is our language, that we are battling to preserve, we know the figures have dramatically fallen in relation to the Gaelic speakers, you know, and Gaeltacht and our daily speakers, due to obviously economic policies.
I know exactly where you're coming from, and you're right, but I actually believe this is way much far simpler than this. This is the Ladies Gaelic Football Association.
Women, yeah.
This is the national sport of our country. This is a club in the Gaeltacht area. The official first language of this country is Irish. Regardless of what's happening in Britain, regardless of what's happening, you should be able to conduct your business in this country as it relates to the national language in the national game, with a sport that has Gaelic in the title. You should be able to do your business, as Gaeliger, whether it is accepting an award, which we welcome it, fantastic. You've got a trophy. You're speaking in Irish. I think it's almost a given at this stage that a team captain must speak in Irish, right? So then, of course, there should be accommodation for someone to be able to deal with these matters in the language of their first choice, rather than expecting them to translate in their minds and articulate exactly how they're feeling. For me, it's actually really very, very simple. It's crazy that we're having this conversation.
And I think you're right, and I think you're 100% right. And again, I don't know really, to be honest with you, the ins and outs of this, and that's not my interest. And as I says, I just don't have any real interest in sport, but I don't take away the hard work that people commit to it, because I see my own brother and Paul and other people of Oli and other great people doing fantastic work in Amon, and everybody doing just unbelievable work. Need that be Gaelic football or athletics or rowing or whatever they're doing. But for me, not being able to conduct yourself in any case, need that be to defend yourself, or like you clearly and rightly says, was accepting an award, and I think that was well said, is that that's not good enough. It's not good enough because we're all trying to preserve the Gaeltacht, a 3,000-4,000-year-old language, and I think it's really, really important. And I get that people struggle with learning languages. Like for me, I'll give you an example. I'm dyslexic. I'm severely dyslexic. I can't read or write in Gaelic. I can only but communicate fully in my language verbally. And I understand all the challenges that brings. So what I'm saying is that we need to do far more. And here we are in a situation where a number of people want to conduct themselves, then it just happens to be that there's a hearing and they want to be able to defend themselves or whatever that is, through a language that they feel
you shouldn't
more
have to translate
and they fully understand.
You shouldn't have to translate your own language, especially on matters associated with the Gaelic Football Association. You shouldn't have to translate your own
because
language.
They're intertwined. Sport and our language are intertwined.
All right, that's. I'm entitled to express a view in regards to that. It's not life or death. It's not about. It's not to do with politics or what have you. Just for me, it's common sense.
It's about the survival of a language.
It's all in there.
Good to meet you, my
Slán, thank you, my who. That's Councillor Micheál Colum-McGillan-Asbach. The LGFA says it's an ongoing hearing and therefore the LGFA cannot comment on it at this time. And we're not seeking comment on the hearing. We're seeking comment on the structure of that hearing. That's what we're seeking comment on, not the hearing itself. Of course, due process has to be followed, but we're actually trying to inquire about how that hearing is structured, but the LGFA can be a little bit hard to get info out of at times. We are out and about on Friday, the 12th of September. We're broadcasting live from the ATU in Donegal to coincide with a big event that's taking place. It is the TBEX. I presume there's no other way to pronounce that. Is there Rick? Rick Calvert, CEO of TBEX?
You got it right, Greg.
All right, thank you. This is a big deal for us here. It's a big conference. So tell me first about TBEX.
Well, TBEX stands for Travel Blog Exchange. When we first started doing this back in 2010, we didn't have much social media. We were just bloggers. But now it's a conference for anybody who's a travel creator, is the word that we use now, or travel influencer. So this is people, it's their job to promote destinations, to promote travel, and to help, you know, travelers, tourists, know where to go, where to stay, what hotels to go to, maybe what tours they might want to go on when they're visiting a certain destination. And yeah, we're excited to be bringing it to Donegal.
In a relatively short amount of years, this has exploded in terms of its influence on the travel industry. Is there any way to gauge, Rick, how influential, you know, travel bloggers, travel influencers are actually on, you know, people's activity in the industry as a whole?
It's upwards of 80% of all travelers will come into contact with a travel creator, a travel influencer, before they book their trip. So, and when you're doing research on Google or now on TikTok or Instagram, you're searching, where should I go on holiday this summer or this fall? You're going to come across a travel creator, a travel influencer, who's going to be posting videos and photographs and blog posts about, with advice on where you should go and what you should do while you're there.
So how independent?
80% is a pretty big number.
Yeah, it's massive. How independent is it? I mean, obviously it's trusted because, 80% wouldn't be checking in on it if it wasn't trusted. But how trusted is it? Because, of course, then it becomes almost part of the business when much of this might be funded by the industry.
You know what, Greg? That's a really fair question. And I would say in the very beginning, and I've been here since the very beginning of this thing, it was almost entirely independent. Mm. That's definitely not true today. This is how travel creators make their money, is through marketing, through advertising, just like you do on radio. You know, we were listening to the ads just before we came on.
But I suppose it comes down to reputation, right? So say, for instance,
exactly,
you build trust. There's always going to be a balance between maybe who's funding it, the product, and the customer, right? But I mean, you know, there has to be an authenticity there. There has to be a level of trust. There has to be, well, I'm coming back to you because, you guided me correctly the last time. And I think companies now realize sometimes, you know, a blogger has to sort of talk about the five things that are great, but also maybe focus on the one thing to avoid. I think it's found the relationship has been settled in that regard, hasn't it?
You're exactly right. It's individual trust for whatever blogger or creator you're listening to. And the other interesting thing is what social media has allowed creators to do is the thing that's more difficult to do in traditional media, is to focus on an extremely narrow niche, right? So adventure travel is a big category at our event. But we have people who specialize in just cruising. We have two different guys who come to our conference who specialize in traveling the world and getting shaves and haircuts. I didn't even know that was a thing. They both have like 700,000-800,000 followers, one on YouTube and one on Instagram. There are a lot of people who think that's interesting, I think every category you could imagine is at TBEX.
Yeah, I think influencers too, these types of content creators actually hold service providers' feet to the fire as well too, actually. I think it's been beneficial because, there was a time whereby you might have got away with lackadaisy customer service or mis-selling something. Those days are gone. So the fact that there's more exposure, real-time exposure to it now, I think the offering... obviously the natural offering is there and it is what it is. And we'll talk about that in a sec. But I think the offering has had to improve because we have more knowledge. Now, so the purpose of 500 attendees potentially from around the globe coming to Letterkenny, is this, it's going to be a fantastic opportunity to showcase Donegal because I don't know what the collective reach of these people are, the attendees, but it's going to be in the tens of millions, obviously, when you've got two fellas with beards with over a million between them, right? So this is
hundreds
huge.
Of millions.
This is huge, isn't it? Like, it's huge.
Hundreds of millions of people. And yes, it's a huge opportunity for Donegal. And this will be our third time with TBEX in Ireland. We were in Dublin the first time, in Killarney several years ago. And this is our first time up north. And people always love to come to Ireland. And that's exactly what they're doing before the conference. And after the conference, they're going to be exploring, everything to do in Donegal and posting about that on social media and on their blogs and YouTube and, in Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff. So they'll be going to restaurants. They'll be going to the pubs. They'll be going to, I know there's a theater there in Letterkenny that people are going to be touring and all sorts of different activities. Yeah. And they'll be posting about that on social media.
And in terms of sort of outdoor opportunities, I mean, we've got so much here. I was going to ask, this is sort of separate to the conference as such. You have to be across all platforms, right, obviously, to be successful in this space. But is there a platform that's almost seen as the go-to for this type of content? Or do you have to make sure you're seeding to whichever platform works best for you?
Yeah, again, good question, Greg. Again, in those early days, it was just blogs. And then, Facebook came along, even MySpace before that, and Facebook and Twitter. And now Twitter's fallen off almost completely. You don't find any travel content there. TikTok is certainly the one with the most energy and the fastest growing right now. But Instagram is very strong. Facebook is very strong. YouTube is very strong. So it really comes down to the individual. Again, the consumer, different consumers follow different platforms.
Age demographics, you will probably see a younger demo on, but not exclusively on your TikTok, or perhaps maybe a more wealthy, older, longer travel, different destinations on Facebook. I'm not saying that's prescribed, but listen, you're going to be there. I can't wait to see you. I have to go now, but I can't wait to see you and the rest of the crew down there on Friday, the 12th of September. This is huge for us here, and I really do hope all attendees get a broad sense of what we have to offer here, and I'm sure they will. So brilliant stuff, Rick. Thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. Bye-bye. That's where we have to leave it for today. Have a wonderful Thursday, everybody. We're going to be back tomorrow morning with the Friday panel and so much more besides, but we leave it there for now.